Hey there, Sean.
Hey, Pierce, how's it going?
It's pretty okay.
All right, that means it's time for another episode of the It's Pretty Okay podcast. Let's do it.
Let's start the show.
Water dripping from the pipes down in the basement. Bare feet on a concrete floor. Notches on the wall of my solitary cell. Sweat dripping out of every pore. It feels
okay.
Like it takes forever.
Got the band together.
It's maybe 5 minutes on
I'm enjoying a frosty beverage and thinking ahead to a bachelor party that I'll be going to in the fall in Asheville, and about all the good beer that I'm going to drink there. And that made it all the sadder, Pierce, when you told us that a beloved spot in Atlanta is shutting down.
Yes. Orpheus here, which is a brewery, they announced over the weekend that the brand will continue. So you can buy beer on their shelves if you're in their distribution area. But there's a weirdness of there will be no physical presence for the time being and maybe forever in Atlanta, where it is from, where the brewmaster is from. And I have spent a lot of time there over the last few years, gotten a lot of beer there, taken a lot of friends there, went there basically every Tuesday for trivia. Do I now have over $400 in brewery cash that is, you know, basically Confederate money? Yes.
As it's $2 bills.
Yeah, it's well, it may actually be more valuable than $2 bills, but it is really sad. And I was kind of almost kind of shocked at how forlorn I was about it. And, you know, I brought this up to you all because this is not something I've experienced before off the top of my head, like a place that I really valued a lot closing. And maybe it has before for me, and I'll remember it as we discuss. But I was just kind of interested if you all have had this experience of, well, loss before, of a place that you are a regular at, that people recognize you, you know, disappearing.
I would say that I don't really think I've had it happen, like, contemporaneously, like not while I was there, but we were talking about this same sort of thing like a couple weeks ago with Ace Biscuit and Barbecue in Charlottesville, which is a place if nothing else, I know that Pierce and I loved. Kevin was the one who informed us that they were shutting down. And it was very abrupt. It was like on a Friday morning, they posted on Instagram that they were going to shut down, and they were going to have like a last hurrah over the weekend, and Sunday or Monday would be the day they closed the doors. And then people showed up in such quantity, that they like bought out all the food, and they were like, okay, well, never mind, we're actually closing today. And it was this like unmooring moment, which is kind of dumb because I haven't lived in Charlottesville since 2019, but you know, it was a place that I really loved to like get up and go for a late breakfast on a Sunday or something. And it was odd to have that gone. That got flipped on its head again within like a week when they announced that, you know, there was new ownership that was going to take over and keep it going. And so like, I guess I'm a little sad that isn't what's happening with Orpheus, because like it is, you know, it is always something on the table where like, the fact that somebody is closing a business like that, especially when it's obviously like a kind of small one-off local business, you know, the fact that it's closing doesn't mean that the business is like completely non-viable. It just means that it's not workable for the current owners with whatever other things they have going on in their life. Like, you know, we don't know, for all we know, like the people that owned Ace had other external financial hardships that were going on that drove that decision. Have no idea.
Yeah. And I think there are two things in there that I think are, you know, very important. I've seen both of them play out here. And the first one is this reaction when a place closes. And Max, I don't know if you have any examples. You've probably had this reaction, but maybe you have examples too. But there's this announcement that a place is closing. And a lot of people go, I can't believe blah, blah, blah is closing. But the immediate response I have is, well, when the hell is the last time you went? Which I've gotten that a lot. It has made me angry. I'm like, when is the last time you went to this place? Because, you know, put your money where your mouth is on the value. But I felt defensive about that. But I've also, like, I recognize that's been my reaction before, too. I mean, is there an instance where you've kind of gone through that, Max?
I don't know if I've gone through that same reaction. The strongest one I can think of is a tea house that opened up while I was in high school. And I went there pretty much every day. And they certainly knew my name. And I was very friendly with the owner and whatnot. But I also sort of witnessed their hardships firsthand. The owner was pretty open about the struggles they were having. They weren't getting the business they wanted. They tried to do different advertising techniques. Their products weren't necessarily appealing. And then I knew it was going to close, and then it did. I don't know if I had the same reaction of, well, when did you last go there? Like, I was there all the time, and my friends that didn't go, it didn't appeal to them. So that wasn't one of those things where they were missing it. But seeing that whole life cycle, like, that close up was tougher, but almost easier. I think in the examples you're giving, there's also times when a place closes that you really like, and then people are like, wow, I can't believe that place is closing. And it's like, well, no one ever went. yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that certainly happens as well. Well, yeah, it's sad either way.
With a tea place, and I understand lots of places sell tea, but like a place that is seemingly tea specific, like that is kind of a hard market. And I think that part of the issue here is that a place where you can go and get beer in a place that is a brewery, like, you know, Atlanta is a place that has a lot of that. There are some specific pluses and minuses to Orpheus, but it's like that is a market that you know that you should be able to have a share of, whereas maybe people are just not there for tea in Newburyport.
But you're also honing in on the businesses closing due to some kind of failure. Mm-hmm. When I've also witnessed businesses closing for totally separate reasons. You know, there's a restaurant that I've been to. I mean, I've only been once because it's in Seattle, but it was absolutely fantastic. And I've talked to a bunch of friends from Seattle and they all loved it. And they decided to close in December. And it was just that the family that ran it was getting older and their kids didn't want to take it on. Business was not a problem, but it closed for other reasons. And it wasn't because of a lack of interest. It wasn't because of a lack of love for it. So like, that's the other hard part, is that then you feel almost as helpless as a fan of the place, because there's really nothing you could have done. I mean, it happened to me growing up in Newburyport as well, where there was a place I went for breakfast every time we had a half day, and our school wasn't even accredited by the state because they gave us too many half days, so it was very nice. Often and the woman who was running it just decided to close it because she was getting older and basically just didn't want to do it anymore. And so, you know, the businesses can close for a lot of reasons. I certainly agree that you tend to think about the, like, oh, were they failing this and that? But, like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think failing economically, and you're right. I know that there was the restaurant, which I really liked in Charlottesville a lot, that closed. Now that's it was that cocktail bar that we've been to together before.
Oh, you think of Brookville.
Yeah, Brookville, which was wonderful. And they closed it just because they're like, it didn't seem that they weren't doing well. It's just they wanted to do something different. And so there is a problem with their expecting it's all about the money. But that said, and, you know, Kevin, you obviously just went to Orpheus for the first and what will be only time. And I did mention that the beer will continue to be sold and will be under that name. And it reminds me that also Ace will continue to exist under new ownership. You see that places all the time, under new ownership. There's an oddity about this other part, which is when people have this recognition and almost this like shock at a place closing, that indicates to me that the brand has value. And that is something that I'm also reacting to, because that feels like a very like almost a modern age ickiness to me of like, well, there's always value in like a brand and having that stamp on it. And I'm struggling with that because the place is so important to me.
But the thing is, there's not always value on that brand. I give you as my perfect example. Think about the amount of damage that has been done to Sports Illustrated in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's been a relatively short period of time. And it's gone from, I don't know, the most important sports publication in the world to a terrible website SEO content mill, specifically because people keep clinging to this idea of the brand having value. And like, I think you're onto something. Like, yes, the brand has value, but the brand can lose its value pretty quickly if it's abused.
Yeah, we're in some ways, I feel like what I'm afraid, you know, may happen with this, because this is going to be on the shelves.
You're afraid that the quality of Orpheus's beer will dip, and then
I don't even know if I'm going to buy it anymore, because on the can it is going to say brewed in North Carolina. Like, it's not a local beer anymore. I have no, I don't know their business structure. I'll remain the brewmaster and his wife. I've met them. He's going off to do really cool things. So I think he, you know, sort of sold the brand, and I'll probably get more information soon, but it's just a different thing. And it becomes like, you go to a live concert, and it's say you go to a live concert at Third Man Records, and they put it straight to vinyl, and then that gets turned into a CD for whatever reason, and then that gets turned into digital. Is it the same thing? Yes, but like, the context of being there and being a part of it adds so much, and that's what I'm sad about, I think. Yes, Max.
So I'm curious, like, it sounds like what you're saying is that, would you be equally disappointed? Because when you initially said, oh, Orpheus, this brewery I really like, big news, would you have been equally disappointed if Baby Binbev came in and acquired the brewery and promised that they won't change anything? Still your beloved local brewery. It's just now owned by an Argentinian, I think, conglomerate that also produces Budweiser and such. Because that's what I think about. Like, if I think about Ballast Point down in San Diego.
Devil's Backbone in Charlottesville.
Certainly Devil's Backbone, although I didn't have as much experience with them. Mm-hmm. But at least for Ballast Point, like, I think Ballast Point was actually purchased by Constellation. Correct. So it probably maybe AB InBev honestly does different things than Constellation. I get the impression from 10 Barrel and Devil's Backbone that when AB InBev buys you, they don't want to change your product. They just want to give you money and help you grow it. That's at least what they claim. Constellation came in, bought Ballast Point, and within a year, their beer was a different product, a significantly worse product. So like, I don't know if it's the same as if a place closes. I mean, you're losing a part of the place either way, and it's certainly going from being like a really quality local, you know, there's something about that you lose either way.
Well, one thing I was going to bring up is the same thing, but it could also just kind of be a booming success of a business that then grows past like what you kind of grew attached to, like Three Notched in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. Like, they are they're huge now, and I still really enjoy their beer. I love eating at the restaurant, but it is definitely like going to Three Notch in Charlottesville is not the same like vibe or experience that it used to be. And And luckily they've been able to stretch out and make a bunch of branches, one including where I live now, that kind of captures it. But, you know, you still can't like talk to the you know, main brewers or anything. And mm-hmm. so like, that's also just a different, like, you're happy for the business, but you're also not, because you want it to kind of stay the way it was.
So increasingly, I think that I feel like it's sometimes a political empty term to talk about, like, community spaces and stuff like that, which are, you know, civic spaces where people can interact. And Three Notch is a great example, because, you know, one of my biggest starstruck moments ever is when we were in the original Three Notched, and there was like some kind of member event, and out of the back comes the owner of Shenandoah Joe's, recognizes us as having been at Shenandoah Joe's earlier, as we're like, we have Jack's Java, and that was like one of the coolest moments ever. Someone who had moved away from Charlottesville, but here is somebody who is like invested in the community, is in this space, is clearly some member event, so it was like doubly invested in Three Notch existing. The owners of Three Notch and how they came to brew beer and stuff, we're not talking about that right now, but like, that is really cool. And when you're like, no, we are going to make this bigger is not necessarily better. So to Max's question of if a big conglomerate bought it, it's like, I think that I would be happy for those that benefit, that I've grown to like and have a relationship with, but I know that my relationship with it has changed, and that's a very selfish thing to be, it's all about my relationship. But I know others who have this, and it's, you know, it becomes a community space. And I think that those are so few and far between. So it's a beautiful thing lost.
Yeah. Yes, and I actually, there's another example. So there's a couple things that have happened here in Bend since I've been here. Two are businesses that I really liked that closed. And when they were closing, they were looking for people to buy those brands. And that's sad. We've already discussed those things. But there's a third one that's happening and now, and so we might need a follow-up. And it's a coffee shop, bar, and custom motorcycle shop that's been a staple of town for a long time. It's a very cool place where, you know, they literally are building custom motorcycles. They've got live music, coffee shop, bar. It's a staple of town. It was in a location where someone bought it up to build, I think they're building affordable housing there. So they are moving the business. And yeah. I don't mean they are moving the business. I mean, they are moving the business. They are moving the entire building that this business was in, because the building was the business, and they're moving it to a different part of town. So I'm very curious how my interactions with this business will be when it is the exact same business, building and everything, same staff, I'm sure, but it's moving a mile away. And I'm wondering then how much of it is like, well, I liked it because of where it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet, because they just moved the building, but they haven't opened it in the new location yet. But I've never had that happen to before. And I'm curious if that'll affect my relationship with that business when, like, you've changed something very minor. Once you're in the business, you shouldn't care if you're in the building. I don't know.
That's so interesting, because I'm sorry to cut Kevin off, but like, this just happened with my preferred local new and used bookstore in Richmond. It wasn't bought by a big conglomerate. It changed hands from one small local owner to another small local owner like a year ago. And they changed the name. They didn't change anything else about it, but they changed the name of the business. And for better or worse, it has like dramatically impacted my perceptions of the place.
Right.
And not in a positive manner at all. That's
Stonewalls in Richmond. That was a terrible choice.
They renamed Chop Suey Books to Shelf Life Books.
Well,
I understand that there are plenty of reasons for that change, and I understand also that the business owners are entitled to do stuff like that, and like that, I'm sure it's their way of making the place feel more like theirs after a year of ownership. And so, like, I'm in that same boat where, like, I don't actually begrudge them the decision, but I can't help that it has seriously changed the way that I feel about it.
Yeah, well, even just the location, that Pierce, you'd probably be just as upset about the Orpheus news if they're like, hey, we're moving to like a new spot, but it's 20 minutes away from your house instead of, you know, 5 minutes away. Like, yeah. Part of the reason that you like it is the proximity.
But the weird thing is the business I'm talking about, I think on a map will actually be closer to my house.
I think whether
either,
a place,
it's like a mile and a half away and it's going in one direction. So it's whether, just a different part of town. It's a different neighborhood. I don't know. It's just,
well, and so that's where
people don't like change.
I recognize that, you know, it's the change, whether it was closer to me or not, but I know that I am ultimately a factor in that. The space that they are in, the building that Orpheus is in, the rest of it is like, I don't know, kind of, what do we call them? Knowledge service type jobs, type things. You know, white collar jobs, modern white collar jobs. And the space is really weird. It only works for a brewery. It's not going to work for anything else. But, I mean, chances are it's rent affiliated. I mean, Spirits of 76, which I think most of us have been
to. Yeah, I was wondering where you're going to talk about Clarendon.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that turnover in Arlington all the time, which is just these landlords hold a lot of power. And the reason they hold a lot of power is because they keep building housing for people like us. And affordable housing is good, but the reason affordable housing has to exist is because it doesn't exist. And so there's this chain reaction, and it's the fault of our wallets. And, you know, I'm glad that it seems, well, I hope that the people at Orpheus, it's not a huge team, land on their feet and are able to continue doing things that they want to do. But I have to point a lot of the blame at myself and, you know, people in, you know, kind of a similar demographic as me, because I just had a discussion with a bartender there the other night about a competing brewery that I will not name. And they pull in apparently $100,000 a weekend, which is just, you know, appealing to kind of the lowest common denominator of that demographic and, you know, just getting them in there to be like beer, drink fast, get drunk type of people. And, you know, that's the type of community that is getting built and is driving revenue and then making those landlords say, oh, I should charge more in rent because I can get a place like that or whatever. And it sucks, but it's my fault. You know, it's my fault to some degree that the motorcycle shop that Max likes is moving, and why things in Clarendon moved, because I wanted to be there. And so places that were making this razor thin margin, as more of me's move there, they just, I mean, how are they going to keep up? I mean, goodness knows how Galaxy Hut remains in Clarendon. They must have bought the building.
They've always charged $40.
It's not the nicest building.
That too.
I think, so like that's one thing is where you can say, oh, I could have gone there more. But there are also times where, like with a lot of things that we've been talking about, there are typically substitutes where you live. When it really hurts is when a place like this closes and there aren't any substitutes. So like one example is there is like one venue in Springfield, Virginia, where like all the metal bands that I liked would go to that venue. And, you know, I went to as many as I realistically, you know, would like to go to. The place wasn't, sometimes it was packed, but sometimes it's pretty empty. But when they closed, it's like, okay, well, now these bands just are not going to come to this area because the venue that the labels always like contact doesn't exist. So, you know, that's one where it's like, look, where I live just doesn't support that venue and there's nothing I can really do about it. And it kind of sucks, but
yeah, there will be no more good barrel aged beer programs in Atlanta. It will just cease to exist. I mean, actually, I don't know if Kevin, you looked at the list, but they have an expansive list of barrel-aged beers in a wide variety, and everybody else is like, we got one cognac barrel, we put this really gross beer in it, come try it, like this trash smells bad, come smell it. It's like, no, I don't want to do that. And here's a place that is, you know, very thoughtful about it, and I've had discussions with them about it, and like there are places that do some of that, but like the expansiveness and the care, we just won't. There will be no substitute. Exactly. And there's probably no substitute for that tea shop that Maxie went to. That was the end. Yeah. That was the death.
But if the market exists, maybe in 5 years there will be a new microbrewery in Atlanta that's producing really good barrel-aged beer.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with routine, is like, that's great, but what about me right now, next week, type of thing. And you know, just to underscore how sad it was, I, as I mentioned, I go to trivia there. Sean has been to trivia there before, and it's been the same person running trivia for a long time, since before the pandemic, so probably 5 years or so. They're now every Tuesday, and for the second round of trivia, there are five questions, plays a song between each question, and then there's the halftime, and the halftime is you have longer to answer. And the question was, who was the original recording artist of the song song played during the second round? What did this person play for the entire second round? Fast Car.
Okay. That's probably the note on which we should wrap up and move on to Pierce's sorry.
It was shocking to be, but notable. So this actually just happened, I don't know, an hour or two before we recorded today, but I was in a meeting with my client at work, and it was me and the client and other people that work with the client. So client agency coworkers. And this particular client has a name that myself and my team have called this person by their name for, you know, the 6 months we've worked with them, even though their email signature has their full name, which includes a middle name. And sometimes people call them by their first name. Sometimes people call them by their middle name. We've always called them by their first name. So someone asked this person, hey, do you go by this first name or do you go by this middle name? Because in the call, people had called them by both names. So what do they say? They go, well, that's my first name. I go by my middle name. I have been calling them by their first name, and so has my whole team, for 6 months now. So I am not sure how to go forward with this, but I am very sorry for calling that person by their first name, but they apparently go by their middle name. And I just learned that today. I talk to them every week, at least once a week.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable, but you also, like, you can't know that unless they tell you.
Yeah.
So, like, don't beat yourself up over it.
Yeah. Because I've heard people call them both.
Yeah.
And they've never corrected anyone, which it's got to be uncomfortable for them too. But,
you know, some people, stuff like that is genuinely so not a big deal that it really doesn't bother them at all too. I don't know.
Maybe it's like Daniel Gibson, and actually everybody at home calls them Booby, and they don't want to tell anybody that they only respond to like Grumpkin. And so they're like, well, you know, my name's Todd, but I go by Grumpkin. I'm not going to tell anyone at work that.
Well, I feel like we're going to have to start calling you Grumpkin now.
Yeah. This is my dog, Spot, but they actually go by Lassie to the immediate family.
All right. Let's have a big idea from pop culture, and I don't know. I would it be safe to assume that anyone on this Skype who still has Netflix has seen at least one, you know, trailer or tile in a recommended for you carousel for The Night Agent?
I'm unfamiliar with this.
Okay. Well,
I don't have Netflix. So.
Ah, well, you're out of luck then. But Kevin and Max, The Night Agent is a political thriller TV series on Netflix about this agent who is like the most square-jawed person to ever live on the planet. He works this special detail where he is essentially like a night watchman. He sits in a windowless room with a next to a phone with no ability to dial out, and waits for the possibility that a distress call will come in from agents involved in covert business. And he gets a call one night from a young woman whose aunt and uncle are hunted down by assassins, and it sets off this chain of events that involves potential conspiracies, maybe reaching to the highest echelons of the American government. And it's a lot of fun. I'm through 7 out of 10 episodes. I've been watching it for like 3 days and I've just been hammering it. So it's like a good, this is one of those things where, like, because of how big Netflix has gotten, they have the ability to make the sort of middle of the road, this is very much not prestige TV kinds of shows that don't get made all that much anymore. So I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. Hong Chow is in the show and is excellent. Yeah, I think it's pretty enjoyable. So you may want to give The Night Agent a spin on the old Netflix machine. All right, it's time. We have, because of our recording schedule, we haven't done this in a couple weeks now. Max, we need a trivia question.
We do need a trivia question. That's right. the topic today is computers.
Oh boy.
It's a fairly broad topic. Yeah, it's a good one. It's really computer history.
Oh,
so,
God.
This one's kind of interesting. I don't know that I, you know, I don't know that I would know it, but it's kind of fun to learn. Wouldn't be the topic I would choose, but, you know, here we are. So, we all know that we take computer security very seriously. You know, there's all these antivirus programs, and people are always worried about malware and Trojans and this and that, and it's like, where did this all come from? So, question is, often regarded as the world's first computer virus, what was the name of the self-replicating program and security test created by Bob Thomas of BBN in 1971? So I'm asking for essentially the name of the first ever virus, but I clarified that it's regarded as such because it was designed as a security test. So it's, you know, but if you Google world's first virus, this would come up.
Hmm.
Was it A, Creeper, B, Grower, C, Animal, D, Blaster, or E, Storm Worm?
Oh, man.
I learned so much computer history, and this never came up.
This
no
didn't
idea.
Come up? I really thought, no. Yeah, I thought this would have been like a computer hardware history 101.
No,
first year security class, this is...
I took cybersecurity, didn't learn this.
And they never taught this? Oh...
I think I have. Right,
I guess I have. Well, I guess I have my. I guess I have my.
20% odds of naming the first computer virus. Or if you were to create a self-replicating program, what would you name it? I don't know.
All right, I'll go Blaster.
Kevin said D, Blaster.
I also say D, Blaster, for no reason, and I thought of it before Kevin said it. I'm not doing it because I think you should know.
I've got Creeper.
All right. Sean, you are correct. It was
wow.
Creeper.
Hey!
Creeper.
Yeah. Creeper was the first virus, probably for creeping all over. I believe Stormworm was actually maybe the first actual malicious virus, but it was a bit later. So, yeah, there you go. You're a little bit of computer history.
All right, that's the end of the show. You can find us at our home on the web, www.prettyokpod.com. You can find us at It's Pretty Okay on your podcast app of choice. We'll be back next week to talk about something else. Until then, I'm Sean.
I'm Pierce.
I'm Max.
I'm Kevin.
Thanks for listening.